KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
In the Outer Sunset.
Suffolk Market.
Union City.
Coming up, testimony from around the Bay Area at this weekend's Women's March.
I feel that the Women's March this year is different because then there was a lot of vitriol and anger. I feel like now is more of a time to band together in the face of what we've now seen.
Then for years, Black women in corporate America have been told to tone it down.
You know, isn't this part of the problem, that we need to tone things down in order for other people to feel more comfortable?
And a Bay Area teacher reflects on how her early childhood experience in an incarceration camp impacted her as an educator.
I've already been to prison once. I don't want it to happen to anybody in my lifetime again.
Voices of Resistance, coming up on Cross Currents. Stay with us. More than 100,000 people attended women's marches around the Bay Area this Saturday in big cities like San Francisco and smaller towns like Walnut Creek, Pacifica, and Sonoma. Marching bands, giant puppets, and parents pushing babies in strollers filled the streets. Like last year, marchers donned pink pussy hats and carried signs critiquing Trump and his policies on immigration, health care, and taxes. But this year, protest signs also captured the message of the Me Too movement, calling for an end to sexual violence. Some participants made connections to local and global issues, from the Bay Area housing crisis to climate change. We sent producers to marches in San Francisco, Oakland, and San Jose to find out how Bay Area residents think the march and the country has changed in the last year, and what changes they still want to see happen.
I'm Monica Coletti. I've been in California for 20 years, but I'm originally from Mississippi. I was in Washington, D.C. for the Women's March last year. I am happy to see that it wasn't a one-time event that has kind of fizzled out. It has grown and strengthened in ways that we're seeing in the media and just in response to so many of the issues that are affecting women around violence and harassment. And so I think it has evolved into something that's not just about the current presidency, but it's really about empowering women in all areas of our lives.
My name is Pat Campbell, and I'm 68 and from Marin. This is my first march ever. I've never been politically active at all. When Obama was elected, I thought I had read his book about the politics of hope or whatever, and I had thought that our country had come so far as racial equality, gender equality, so forth down the line. And what Trump has done in his divisive manner is showed us the underbelly of America. We haven't come as far as we should have.
My name is Ashley Eastman. I'm 23 years old from Castro Valley. I'm here to march mainly for victims and survivors of sexual abuse and assault, also to support the indigenous people's rights and also support the movement of the missing and murdered indigenous women. I think a lot more women are speaking out against different kinds of abuse that they have experienced, whether it's in the workplace or just day to day. I think there's sort of this momentum that's been going that's been great, a lot of women speaking out.
My name is Sue Barbieri, and I live in Sunnyvale, California. I'm 94 and a half. My birthday is in August, and I'll be 95. The big issue is that we have a president that doesn't understand what the American people are all about. And I'm so insulted the way he talks about immigrants, because I am the daughter of immigrants who worked real, real hard during the Depression, and we survived. And I want to give hope to everybody, just as I have survived.
But no one knows me, no one ever will, if I don't say something.
Next gen feminist, right there in the front row. Gotta be maybe 6 years old.
My name is Kaitav Patel, and I'm 7 years old.
I'm from Fremont, California.
Okay, so my name is Maya Patel, and I'm 11 years old, and I'm from Dublin, California.
I'm here to support women, and I believe in science and the earth and taking care of the earth.
So my sign is about supporting women, and it says, "We women will rise." It's a poem that I made myself.
Do you mind reading it out for me?
Okay. The world can be a cruel place sometimes, but no matter how strongly the world is against us, we women will rise.
My name is Kavita Patel, and I was with my friends last year, and this year I was inspired to take my kids. I saw how many kids were there last year, and they're really aware. Well, I feel like last year just set off a wave of revolution for women. I mean, because of last year's march, there was so much awareness created, and the Me Too movement, and Time's Up, and it's just across the board. It's been amazing.
My name is Amira Tulloch. I'm from Daly City, California. I feel that the Women's March this year is different because then there was a lot of vitriol and anger. I feel like now is more of a time to band together in the face of what we've now seen of the Trump administration and kind of reband and refocus our energy and attention towards the 2018 election and really making progress in the face of all of the changes that have now been made in America.
My name is Black Star. I'm a Native woman. A native of San Francisco. Being a native woman, I came up always being stepped on, and I stand back and I see all of us are being stepped on. You don't have to be a native woman to be stepped on. You don't even have to be a woman to be stepped on. You could be anybody and they will step on you.
I am Sierra Green, I am 24, and I am from Oakland, California. And what's my impression of the march? We have folks on stage talking about the importance of voting power. We have folks on the stage talking about hashtag Me Too. And I'm going around with a petition to get voting rights to folk, incarcerated folk and people who are on parole. And I'm getting I don't feel comfortable signing that petition. So when we talk about hashtag Me Too, when we talk about voting rights, let's be clear on who we're talking about. We're not talking about incarcerated folk, and that's 180,000 people we're not talking about. That's 180,000 people who are black and brown that we're not talking about. And hashtag Me Too, that is an entire population of women prisoners who experience sexual violence on a daily that's state sanctioned with the strip searches, with the cavity searches. And we're not talking about them in the hashtag Me Too movement. So my impression of the march is everyone, let me not say it, there's a lot of people here for the pink hats and the show and to relive their 1960s Gloria Steinem days. My pussy grabs back power, but we're not talking about black women. We're not talking about black trans women. We're not talking about black men. We're not talking about communities that are deeply affected. Mostly, we're talking about, white women who care about their rights.
I can't keep quiet.
My name is Anita Cadena Sanchez, and I'm from Oakland. I'm really sad to see us back here at 2018, but we are. So my sign reads, 2018 Main Street, reunited, we resist. Proudly, we persist. And my poster, if you take a look at it, the letters are made out of people's faces. So I want to really show that. This is a march of the people for the people, and we are the people, and we must resist and persist.
Those interviews were collected by Asala Sanipour in San Francisco, Lilia Vega in Oakland, and Christine Nguyen in San Jose. You can see photos from the marches at our website, klw.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Reporter Leela Day and I host the podcast The Stoop, which originated right here at KALW. We talk about issues in the Black diaspora that aren't always talked about in the open. So one of those things is the caricature of the angry Black woman. For decades, Black women have been stereotyped as being loud or dramatic, often asked to, quote, tone it down, especially in the workplace. In this episode of The Stoop, Leela chats with some of her corporate employee girlfriends about that image and how it affects their working environment.
Okay, so I had to bring up this angry Black woman thing with these girls because I knew it would bring up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both very strong Black women, mm-hmm. and they've both admitted to adjusting how they act when it comes to work.
Attitude. So I think there's some truth to it, but I think that I learned to leave that at the door, mm-hmm. fight every battle in a corporate environment, and I'm aware that probably my default is that, to sort of be aggressive and roll my eyes and shake my head and put my hand on my hips.
Like you have now.
Like I have it now. So I'm very aware of that, and I make a point to not do it. So I purposely diffuse the situation.
So do you feel like you're not being your true self then?
Of course not. Of course not. There's no room for your true self in a corporate environment. We're all acting. HR is involved. You can't not follow protocol. You leave your true self at home.
I've felt this sense of defeat when I have shown that side of myself.
Sure.
And it's like I'm beating myself up because I defended myself, mm-hmm. which I had every right to do. Mm-hmm. But I feel like now I've given something away. I've like given this like part of me, or shown this side of me that I shouldn't have shown. And then it's like, but why? Like I'm feeling bad for feeling bad, you yeah. know? And it's just like horrible.
So this whole thing, it got me wondering like mm-hmm. about this armor that they were talking about, this armor that Black women wear so often. Is this something we should be worrying about?
Mm-hmm.
Like mentally?
Mm-hmm.
And is it okay? Is it healthy? And is there some truth to this angry Black woman thing?
It is what it is. So we tend to be much franker, much more direct, and don't sugarcoat a lot of things much of the time.
That's Dr. Loma Flowers. She's a psychiatrist, and she has a lot to say about this.
I think obviously it varies from woman to woman, right? We all know women who are sweet, just like any other group of women, there's all kinds. But as a general rule, the sort of mainstream African-American culture tolerates much more frankness and directness, and often expects it than the white culture frequently expects it.
So Dr. Flowers has spent her career working with Black folks and teaching emotional competence. She's an educator, writer, speaker, she's all that. And so I wanted to talk with her because Black women are at higher risk than others when it comes to depression. African Americans are 20% more likely to experience serious mental health problems when compared to the general population. But we're less likely to seek treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem with mental health issues in Black communities is real. And so one of the things that Dr. Flowers focuses on is what she says is to package what you say.
Package. What does that mean? That sounds like toning it down.
Oh, girl, watch it. Flowers will check you.
Ooh.
Toning it down to me does not mean capitulating. It does not mean giving up your position.
What got me thinking about this whole thing, Hannah, initially was Sandra Bland,
mm-hmm.
a Black woman in Texas who was pulled over for not signaling and was later found dead in a jail cell.
Have the right.
Step out of the car.
You do not have the right to do that.
I do have the right. Now step out or I will remove you.
I refuse to talk to you other than to identify myself.
Step out or I will remove you.
I am getting removed for a failure.
Step out or I will remove you. I'm giving you a lawful order.
So I talked to Dr. Flowers about this, and I was mad. I'm angered that Black women need to do three things. First, we're expected to tone it down, mm-hmm. tone down our reactions in order to not be perceived a certain way.
Right.
Right. And then second, we need to be able to have some sort of racism detector to make sure that doesn't trigger anyone else's aggressive response.
Mm.
Third, we have to realize that even when we're complying with steps 1 and 2, there's a good chance that the outcome may still be a negative one.
Still.
And as far as your duty is to protect yourself, I don't think that's a duty you can ever set aside. And the risk of setting it aside, like Sandra Bland, is enormous.
I mean, the risks we're talking about can be losing your job, right? But it can also mean death.
Yeah, whether it was foul play or suicide, Flower says that for Black women especially, we need to think about survival first.
Protect yourself comes first, right? And yes, other people have a responsibility to protect you, but as adult women, we have a responsibility to protect ourselves also, and you cannot relinquish that responsibility merely because you're in the presence of somebody who ought to be taking care of you more. And so when tone it down usually means, is like a euphemism for shut up, and I don't see it that way. I see it, as I said, as being much more strategic and political about how you say the very same thing. And stick to your guns.
But Hannah, I get what Dr. Flowers is saying. But my gut reaction to these types of situations is f*** this.
Mm.
You know, isn't this part of the problem? That, you know, we need to tone things down in order for other people to feel more comfortable? Or that we should be constantly assessing situations to make sure we're not misinterpreted?
Yeah.
Or should it be that other people should be more aware of their actions and understand that there's some deep-rooted stuff in all of this?
But is it logical that every person you meet is going to be analyzing your history with racism before they do something that offends you? I don't know.
Yeah, I know. Right. But yeah. It's not necessarily logical to think that I need to check myself every time I react to someone, because otherwise I'll be stereotyped as an angry Black woman.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
That's an excerpt from the podcast The Stoop, hosted by me and reporter Leela Day. You can hear that full episode called Angry Black Woman and the rest of the whole first season at thestoop.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Since the 2016 election, kindergarten teacher Janet Dijogo has felt alarmed by the rise of xenophobic and racist sentiment in this country. But it's something she's no stranger to. At 5 years old, she was one of 120,000 Japanese Americans sent to incarceration camps in the midst of the Second World War. Last year, KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma went to visit her in her classroom in Marin County to hear how her early years of being imprisoned shaped her as an educator.
This is a story about one of my very first teachers, the one that taught me how to tie my shoes and how to read my first book. Me, I'm just one of hundreds of kids who've passed through her kindergarten classroom.
My name is Janet Dijogo. I have taught for 55 years.
There's a really special way in which Mrs. Dijogo talks to kids, with a candor you don't often hear from adults.
I don't feel respected. So can you give me respect?
Spend a morning in her classroom, and you can see her years of experience shine through. What you might not be able to tell, though, is that she herself never attended kindergarten. And that's because when Mrs. Dijogo was 5, the same age as her students, she and her whole family were forced from their home and incarcerated. Before World War II, Mrs. Dijogo's parents were sugar pea farmers in Pescadero.
My mother wanted to be a teacher, but she couldn't be a teacher because there was racial prejudice at work. And so she went back, and then she married to a farm, and then she married my father, who was also a farmer.
She still remembers. After Pearl Harbor, the military police banged on her family's door and searched the house.
I was so frightened that I sat on the bed, and I remember digging my fingernails into my legs so that I wouldn't scream. And for some reason in my mind, I knew I had to be quiet. What I know now as an adult is that's really trauma for a young child.
Eventually, Mrs. Dijogo and her family were sent to the Tanforan Assembly Center. It was an old horse racetrack in San Bruno that held over 7,000 Japanese Americans. From there, the family was sent to the Topaz Incarceration Camp in Utah.
All I remember is the tar paper barracks and the sandstorms and walking and getting lost in the sandstorm because it was blowing so hard you couldn't see the buildings. And just standing there and crying on my way home from school and just wetting my pants because I didn't know what to do.
She lived at that camp for 3 years.
I was scared most of the time, knowing there was something all of a sudden in your five-year-old world that was very wrong.
And she still carries some of that fear.
I still, if there is a knock at my door, like yesterday the plumber was coming, knock, knock. There is an instant of fear that I feel every single time I open a door.
No one ever talked about what was happening. So Mrs. Dijogo grew up thinking that everyone went to camp. That was until she was a sophomore at UC Berkeley, when she came across an article on Japanese incarceration camps.
I came home from college and I said, Mom, you didn't tell us why we were in camp, you know, that was an outrage. And she said, it doesn't do any good to leave a legacy of hatred. I wish they had told me, you know, why I was scared, because I carried that sense of fear and the tongue-tiedness that happened to me. I think I would have understood it and been able to work with it instead of waiting until I was, you know, a teacher already.
As an adult, she developed tools to deal with her feelings, like practicing Aikido.
Okay, so your back is straight. We're going to do a 1 minute sitting. And you're just going to concentrate on your own center.
And she brings what she's learned into the classroom, teaching kids mindfulness in a period called energy time.
Eyes open, and we're going to bow out from here. How peaceful it is now. You can choose to keep that peace with you all day. It's a challenge.
She also talks openly about her time in the camp with older students at her school. I asked her, what do you tell them?
Just that I was in prison.
She knows they're capable of empathy.
And I say, if I cry and I get emotional, you start to breathe. And you just be there with me.
Mrs. Dijogo should have been in kindergarten when she was 5 years old. It's no coincidence that this is the grade she teaches.
It was my karma that I ended up being in kindergarten. And I'm very aware of how sensitive those children are, because I was that young girl. You know, I was that little girl.
Lately, she's felt more urgency in telling her story. The recent rise in anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant rhetoric raises red flags for her.
And I think, I've already been to prison once. I don't want it to happen to anybody in my lifetime again. But it's happening anyway. You know, and I can't but help think about refugees and all the young children that are throughout the world that are frightened.
Mrs. Dijogo was thinking of retiring. After all, she's in her 80s, and she's been teaching for more than half a century. But after the election,
this little voice said, you just keep teaching kindergarten another year, because that's where you can practice. I mean, because I understand the darkness and I feel it myself.
She works hard to create a classroom that's both honest and protective, where everyone feels welcome.
And it's not the way another teacher might do it, but that's sort of foundational to what I'm trying to present, or a space I'm trying to create for the children that has nothing to do with really curriculum.
What I know now about being in her class was that she was showing us all along how to be compassionate, how to keep each other and ourselves safe. It's the lesson she hopes we all pass on. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Kingsley Ma.
That story originally aired in February 2017. That's it for today's show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Atemu Atan, Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Amber Miles, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Marin's folk and country band, the Green Leaf Rustlers. They'll play an all-ages show at the Chapel in San Francisco tonight. Doors open at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.